now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. No! Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hello, everyone! Welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, as I run into my desk, as the younglings return from Ilum with Ahsoka, their ship comes under attack by Hondo's gang of pirates. The children must use ingenious and improvised traps to thwart the brigands. There will be blowing out of the spaceship. Home Alone remakes, and David Tennant giving life to an awesome droid. We're talking about Test of Strength this week. How you doing, Chris?
Oh, good. Don't think I didn't note blowing out into space,
that's
too.
That's actually one of my notes. Like, when they were like, are we going to get sucked out to space? No one's getting sucked out into space. And I'm just like, Chris is ranting right now.
Right now, I'm just like, Ahsoka, you're a shitty teacher. Even though it's time of danger, she could have said, that's correct, students, will be sucked out into space. No, will be blown out into space, not sucked out into space. She didn't even have to say that. She just had to say blown, just to correct them passive-aggressively. But
that is,
no.
Literally one of my notes is Chris is ranting right now.
Yeah, you're getting me all wound up, and I'm starting to mix up my words and stuff already. Yeah, it's a pet peeve of gardeners, too. They've been pretty good about it, and even in Clone Wars, they've said it a few times and gotten it right and been just like, yeah, okay, good.
Well, we can let them slide because they're kids. They don't know better.
Yeah, Ahsoka said it too, though.
Yeah, that's true. She's a teenager. Those youths.
Whatever.
Did you have a good week?
I did have a good week. I went to see a vintage print of Suspiria, and any horror fans out there know how awesome that is.
Yeah, and then this one was all like, well, we need to get business cards. And I'm like, what is this wee shit? I have J-Guys and Jedi business cards.
You're the only one. You're the only one. I should have been, yep.
When you said that, I was like, what's this wee shit?
It was this weird thing that they had, that this horror t-shirt company that does horror t-shirts sponsors a weekly horror or retro film there at this theater. And so they had, like, ads for their company, but never once did we see a single one of their t-shirts. I'm like, ooh, horror t-shirts. I like t-shirts, and I like horror. And I never got to see one of their t-shirts. It was one of the weirdest. They put a lot of time and effort into their marketing, except they just didn't show their product.
Man, my coworker would love that. He loves cheesy horror stuff.
Oh, this is like classic. It's somewhere between cheesy horror and, like, Hitchcock.
Oh, he would still love that. He loves all horror.
Oh, yeah. This is
the guy who has, like, a collection of Halloween 3 pins that he's like, nobody gets this unless they know Halloween 3. And, like, so far in, like, the 5 years I've worked with him, like, two people have been like, that's a Halloween 3 pin. He's like, yeah, I know!
Oh, well, he should listen to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror, because we did Halloween 3 this Halloween, as a matter of fact. We know our Halloween 3, let me tell you. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock.
Chris, I'm not ready.
You are.
I'm not. Because tonight Rebels starts back, and I'm 99.9% sure Kanan's gonna die tonight.
Oh, jeez.
Because, I was looking at the descriptions for the episode, and the first episode is like, they are going to be gathering together to save one of their own. And I was like, cool, because, you know, the mid-season ended with Hera getting captured. So I was like, okay, so they're going to be saving one of their own. I'm like, I know Hera's going to be okay, because she was in fucking Rogue One. And then the description for episode 2 says, after suffering a devastating loss, the rebels must band together to blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what? A devastating loss? No!
Does it have to be a loss of life?
I don't know, but I don't foresee Kanan coming out at the end of this.
It's going to be a short episode of J-Guys and Jedi this week, folks.
Oh, I'm 99. I'm not. Actually, by the time this episode comes out, Rebels will be over because it's 3 weeks. It's only a 3-week run.
I gotta tell you, Hope, we've been right on the money, just like in our estimation, because I was editing today the show that's going to come out tomorrow night, this Wednesday, and on that show you said, hey, I think by the time this episode airs, the new Rebel should be out, and yes, it will have been out for 2 days.
Oh!
So we're on the money, yeah, we're on the money.
Well, we are only 3 weeks ahead, so we gotta put a few in the can, so actually we're doing okay. I wasn't sure if I was gonna record tonight, because I was feeling hella sick this morning, but I'm feeling better, so. All right. Well, I'm ready to get started. Are you?
I am.
All right. I'm so excited about the platitude, guys. You don't even know.
Oh, jeez. Oh, that's right.
It's
I saw
so
it this week, and I was like, oh, why does it have to keep getting sketchy?
Oh, this is like, you guys remember back in season 2?
This is on the border. It's on the border, but it's still, it's on the border.
Like, back in season 2, there was the one about, like, being in bed with, the dad or whatever in the Boba Fett episode. This, right, I would say this one takes that one so bad. All right, well, we're not there yet. We're almost there. Test of Strength is the 95th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on November 10th, 2012. It was written by Christian Taylor and directed by Bosco Ng. Some extra information for you. David Tennant is the voice of Hugh Yang. Hugh Yang. Blah, 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 Lang. I know his name is Professor Hugh Yang, but I just totally butchered that. It's fine. I'm sick. That's my excuse. If you don't know who David Tennant is, for one, where have you been? Two, give me your nerd card. Three, he was Barty Crouch Jr. in Harry Potter, Kilgrave in Jessica Jones, currently Scrooge McDuck in the current DuckTales, and of course, the 10th Doctor in Doctor Who. David Tennant also won an Emmy for this role. Hugh Yang is over 1,000 years old, having taught younglings how to construct their lightsabers, and that also includes Master Yoda. Petra's lightsaber move, the Whirlwind of Destiny, that he says at the beginning of the episode, was created by a Star Wars fan named Brendan Lake as an entry for Hasbro's Join the Jedi contest. His name is also noted in the episode credits for being the creator of this move. The design of the ship, the Crucible, stems from the ancient Corellian cruisers seen in Star Wars The Old Republic video games. As an indicator to its age, its interior space is marked by the ancient Jedi symbol seen in the game.
I sort of noticed that in there.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was actually cool that, like, Professor Yang is, like, so old. And he's just like, let me school you, children. I actually really like that character a lot.
Yeah, well, we'll get into it on part one. But, I like that robot.
I like that robot, too. I think he was, like, the majority of my notes, to be honest.
I don't know if he's an, Emmy-winning robot, but I really like the robot.
No, he won the Emmy for the voice role. It was like, I think the Emmy was, let's see, David Tennant, Emmy, play the typing music. Clone Wars, you better be playing that typing music. It was for like, I think, it was a, Clone Wars won Emmy for Outstanding Special Class Animation, and David Tennant won for Outstanding Performance in an Animated Series.
Right. As the robot.
So, yeah. So he won it for...
I thought he was really good. I don't know if it's an Emmy-winning role, but that's fine.
You still got, like, another episode with him.
That's true.
But also, who the fuck was he up against that year? I mean, he could have been up against, like, I don't know. Oh, no, I just, like, deleted some of my notes there. Hold on. Sorry, I just deleted some of my notes. Sorry. David Tennant, Emmy, Clone Wars. Who was he up against? Because he could have been up against, like, I don't know, like Barney, for all I know.
Yeah, right.
Like
SpongeBob
animated
or
Barney
something.
Or something. Let's see. Who was he up against? I know that he... Who was... What year was this? This was June... Well, I don't care if it was June 14th. This was 5 years ago, so that was 2013. So, Emmy 2013 animated nomination. Look what you made me do. You're making me do stuff. But this Yahoo News, what a terrible thing that you have. Story continues. There we go. That's what I'm looking for. Story continues. Okay. Oh, here we go. So, he was up against Curtis Armstrong from Dan vs. The Hub, Jim Cummings as Hondo Anaka from Clone Wars, David Tennant has Huang, Lee Tucker from Slug Terra, whatever the fuck that is, and Jerry Traynor in Tough Puppies, and Sam Witwer in Clone Wars. So actually, he was against Maul and Hondo in one.
That's funny.
I know. Now that we wasted everybody's fucking time. Yoda, you have to be good this week. There's kids. I like. No, you're gonna have to be good this entire arc. There's children around.
Yoda's afraid to read this one.
Yoda might go to jail for this one.
The young are often underestimated in bed. Yoda just wants to point out that 200 years old is to Yoda, or young is to Yoda. Yoda never dates under 200.
I can just see, like, Mace Windu judging you from the corner.
He just looks at Yoda.
That's his resting bitch face?
Unnerving it is.
I know, isn't it?
So looking at me he is.
He slowly pulls out a wet blanket. And just, like, starts creeping up, like, when you're trying to, like...
Not wet blanket again! Not wet blanket again!
Flump!
Yeah, well, Windu's gone. It stays away from the kids or it gets the wet blanket again.
It stays away from the skin or else it gets the hose again. The blanket again.
The hose. No problem.
Oh.
Akron.
Yoda just made a hoe joke.
Oh, I was making a Hannibal joke. Not a Hannibal joke.
Yeah, I think we succeeded in both of them.
That's what I was trying to say. Cheers. I feel off tonight. It's fine. It's hard with kids. We can't.
You got rebels on the mind, yeah.
You have rebels on the mind. I'm pretty sure I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die, Grant. I'm not gonna be okay. When we actually get to rebels the whole time, I'm just gonna be like, oh, I'm gonna die. T minus 40 something episodes.
I'll probably be up late tonight if you need some counseling.
Nah, I'll be okay. I'm gonna be into the TV show, but he's my favorite character in Rebels, and he might not die. It might be next week. It could be next week's episode. I don't foresee him coming out of this season, so I really don't. So, Act 1?
Act 1.
To be fair, it was really hard getting into that platitude, and then I also just spent 5 minutes trying to find out who David Tennant was up against, so I kind of hijacked this. But that's a hard platitude to get into and then come out of.
It's okay. There's so much magic to be done in editing.
I know. Thanks, Chris. You're the best. Act 1.
Act 1.
Last week, Ahsoka and Yoda guided a group of Jedi younglings to Ilum to find their kyber crystals for their lightsabers for an event called the Gathering. The kids consist of Katuni, who is the sensible one, Petro, who is overconfident and bragging, Biff, the Ithorian, who we call Biff, Gnody, the Rodian, who we call Sassy Star Eyes, and Zat, who is the tech guy, who we called Kid Fisto. And then there's Gunji, who's the Wookiee, who I just make completely adorable Wookiee names for as they pop up. They all hop on the ship, the Crucible, to head back to the Jedi Temple. On the journey, they will learn how to make their lightsabers. On to this week! Ahsoka comes into the training room, watching all the adorable kids working on their sweet lightsaber moves. With sticks. Training sticks. She gathers the kids and introduces them to Hu Yang! Hu Yang! I know his name! It's Hu Yang! Hu Yang, it's two syllables. I know his name, his fucking name. A droid from the Old Republic who has taught every Jedi how to build their lightsabers. Sassy Star Eyes isn't impressed until Hu Yang rattles off his qualifications and shows them holograms of potential lightsabers. The kids are now excited. He explains that kyber crystals are just rocks until they awaken the force in them. He will teach them how to force awaken. They're crystals.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I tried to make a dumb joke. Anyway. Hu Yang is also impressed by our adorable Wookiee baby, since Wookiee Jedi are rare and we all are proud of Gunji. Hu Yang walks Gunji through what he imagines his lightsaber would be like with Gunji's individual force to help him succeed in battle and to be humble and retreat. Gunji manages, imagines a wooden lightsaber from a tree as strong as metal. Huang playfully takes out parts of parts for their lightsabers. Oh my god! Swearing they will all have knowledge that they need to build their own lightsabers before they leave the ship. But uh-oh, what's that on the horizon? It's Hondo Inaka, our residential favorite pirate. He plans on attacking the youngling ship to get their kyber crystals because attacking children isn't below Hondo. He sets out to attack their ship.
Isn't it below him, he seems kind of psyched about it because it's going to be easier pickings.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's going after Anakin Skywalker.
Right, but how does he know that there isn't someone like Anakin on the ship there with him, you know?
That's true. Maybe he did some pre-scouting, but that's true. I mean,
he would have been screwed if Yoda was on the ship, right? Yoda went over there with him.
I kind of wish it was Obi-Wan now, because he'd be like, oh my god, my best friend Obi-Wan, hey!
I'm here to rob your kids.
Hand me your kids, and then we can have like a tea party. It'll be fun.
I have very little notes for this one. I was very happy to see R2, just being R2. Always happy to see Hondo. And I called it, man. I was like, man, that Wookiee should have a wooden lightsaber. That would be really cool, and it would be very Wookiee-like. And sure enough, he starts making a wooden lightsaber. So I like the idea of a wood lightsaber. And why not, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
there's got to be some, like it's Star Wars saying wood from a tree that's, like, hard as iron, you know?
He said it in the episode, so he was, like, from this Bioliac tree or something.
Yeah, and you would think it would have, and you'd think you would even have a little extra little force mojo on it just because it's made out of more natural materials, I guess. But that's what I'm always happy to see Hondo, and I'm always happy to see the flying saucer ship. I love how it looks. I love how it sort of rotates in two sections and just sort of always has that wobbly, like, cheap special effects look to it a little bit. Like, it's a little unstable. I love that.
Let's be clear. Hondo's probably a little cheap.
I love it. I love it. So whenever it shows up, I'm always glad to see it.
Sorry.
That's all I really had. The kids would just be, you know, the thing is,
They're cute.
They're cute. What's his name? The obnoxious one hasn't seemed to learn anything from his recent ordeal in the last episode, you know?
But I mean, sometimes it takes a while for those to stick with kids. Couple timeouts, it takes a while, so. For me, I really enjoy listening to David Tennant. Like, he's such a great actor, but he's also a really amazing voice actor. He's done a lot of voice work, and like most recently, I've been enjoying him in DuckTales as Uncle Scrooge. And I really love being able to, like, whenever I get to see him do voice work, because he's such a good voice actor.
Well, I immediately love that they called him on being a droid to design the lightsabers, because that's the first thing I thought. I'm like, a droid? What's a droid going to have anything to tell them about the Force, you know? But he immediately, you know, it was immediately addressed. It was great. And when he was done, I was like, all right, I believe you.
Yeah, because, I mean, it actually kind of makes sense. It'd be one thing if you had something like Joe Camel or Yoda doing it, but they're only so old. Right. But the fact that, like, Huang is from the Old Republic, like, he's 1,000 years old. I mean, he predates, like, everything we know in Star Wars canon, or in, like, the very beginnings of Star Wars canon, and he's seen it all. Like, he really, like, I would love just to have, like, some kind of, I don't know, like, comic or, like, short story, like, almost, like, set up in a series of short stories where it's, like, him talking with, like, telling various stories about various Jedi. I just, even if it was just, like, a little mini-series or something, or just, like kind of like A Certain Point of View, which is just a series of short stories.
No, he would be a great, like, you know, connecting link to it, like an old horror anthology show or something. He would be a good just connecting link between stories of different Jedi from different time periods.
Because, like, even then, just, like, he could tell you, I mean, being a droid, he has all that data. So, I mean, he could tell you about, like, the first Jedi he ever took care of, to Yoda, to, like, Anakin, to Ahsoka, to these kids. I mean, though I was sort of wondering, like, after the Jedi Purge, I wonder what happened to him. Like, Because I would feel that, like, the knowledge that he has about building lightsabers and all that, like, that would be something I'm sure that the Emperor was like, we need this guy.
I don't know, though, but I think they were really sloppy. They seemed to be really sloppy about it, you know? It was just like, Anakin in to wipe him out. He could have easily loaded himself onto a freighter and, like, just, like, gone off to do, like, grunt work or be, like, turned off in the corner somewhere, someplace, you know?
Though, like, the reason I ask is in the most recent arc of the Vader comics, we find out that Jocasta knew the old librarian survived. And so one of the things that she has been doing since the Jedi Purge is she built, like, a little library on this, like, remote planet, like, in a cave behind a waterfall and sealed it away and everything. But there was, like, one thing she needed to get out of the library. And so I just started thinking, like, man, if she went and, like, got, like, Hu Yang and, like, stuck him in there and was like, you're going to stay here and help me rebuild the Jedi Order. I mean, God, he knows so much. I mean, that would have been a cool callback. But, of course, then they would have been like, oh, we need to explain who Hu Yang is in this one issue of Vader and blah, blah, blah. But I kind of wish they did that.
It would have been nice to have him turn up in Rebels.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I'm surprised that, well, I have to wonder, because I was reading, actually...
there wasn't really anybody to build their lightsaber. It would have been really fun to have him turn up somewhere, you know, in one of the Jedi temples that they went to or something, you know?
Yeah, because I was watching a video about, like, the known galaxy. It was done by Star Wars Explained, so they were explaining, like, you know, the core worlds, the middle rim, the outer rim, and stuff like that. Ilum is in the uncharted regions. You can only get there by being a force user, knowing how to get there. And so that's why I thought it was really cool is that, well, then of course we know that the Vader and the Empire from the Ahsoka novels, they found Ilum and, like, broke the planet and have to get all the Kyber crystals.
Vader should have gone there at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. So actually that makes sense because we were talking last week about whether or not Anakin would have done the gathering. Well, of course, then he would be, because the Empire found Ilum and broke the planet in half.
Right.
But I have to wonder where Hu Yang is now in the original trilogy, because he could be a potentially really awesome, like, ally for some kind of Jedi Order.
yeah, he's got actual memories of almost every Jedi up to a certain point.
Oh my gosh, I kind of, like, want to post a question of, like, when in the Star Wars comics is Hu Yang going to show up for Luke to find? Like, because that would be, if Luke is trying to start a Jedi Order, I mean, Hu Yang would be, like, an amazing ally to have.
Yeah.
So, speaking on more on Hu Yang with my notes, I just like this opening section. It's a really good introduction to his character. Because, like, the thing is, like, his face is very blank as a droid. It's a droid face. But for one, like, Tennant gives so much personality to his voice. And he also has these, like, little character bits, too. Like, he has a monocle that flips up and down. And he walks with his hands behind his back like he's an old miser. But then when he's, like, looking through all the drawers for all the parts, like, he has all these extra limbs that, like, pop out of nowhere and, like, is grabbing stuff, and it's very quirky. So I like that, like, he has a very blank, like, expression on his face as a droid. But they gave him all these, like, quirky little things to fill in that character. And then Tennant gives him the voice to do it, too. So it's just a really cool intro with great design choices and movements, as well as vocal work, to establish who this character is.
I agree. That's what makes him, actually. Actually turns him from, like, oh, this guy could be annoying, to he's really cool, you know?
That also, that scene when he's going through all the drawers, it reminded me of Ollivander's wand shop from Harry Potter.
Yeah, it was probably influenced by, I mean, Harry Potter was out for a while by the time this came out.
And then something that caught my ear was when Hu Yang was working with Gunji, the Wookiee youngling, he was saying, well, what is your force? You need your force to awaken this. And that was really interesting because it kind of gave me more of an impression of the living force that, like, Qui-Gon would constantly talk about, because only Gunji's force would work for his Kyber crystal to, like, awaken it and stuff like that. So I just thought that was kind of, like, a unique thing that these Jedi each have their own, like, force signature to work with their Kyber crystal.
That would make sense since they were attracted to a unique crystal, you know?
Yeah. And it's just, like, I like how in Clone Wars they go more into, like, the possibilities of the living force if it's there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, basically in Harry Potter, you have what, like a strand of hair, right?
It's different.
You have a
sometimes like it's like a unicorn hair or a phoenix feather.
Right, but it's basically a kyber crystal.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you basically find you know, it's almost the same sort of thing, you know.
That's
so
true.
I think it's Star Wars, just like paying a little back to Harry Potter, you know.
Yeah, and it was kind of funny because David Tennant then went on to be in Harry Potter, so. And I've said it before, and I've said it again, and I'll say it over and over every time he's here. I love Hondo. I fucking love Hondo. But I started thinking, he's been in a lot of episodes this season so far. He's been out in 3 out of 7 of the episodes so far. And we've said before, earlier in the show, that Hondo's best used in small amounts, like popping up here and there. So do you think that they're overusing him? And my answer is no. I'm always happy to see him.
I don't think they're overusing him because what they're doing, it reminds me actually of the TV show Dexter, where you start liking the character in the first season. You start liking this character. He's a psychopathic serial killer, though, you know. And then about halfway through the season, they remind you, you know, no, this is not a good person. So, you know, yeah. We've been having Hondo, and the last time he was sort of getting, you know, Anakin had to use him to help him. So it was sort of like, yeah, Hondo's sort of becoming our ally, and it's like, no, don't get that into your head. If he gets a chance to you know,
grab some children,
right, he has no problem assaulting Ahsoka, you know, if it means profit to him. And you know, a lot of times, you know, the pirate will say, oh, as long as it means money, I don't care. And but he's got a heart of gold like Han Solo or something, but not Hondo. So yeah, I liked it. It made Hondo Hondo's becoming a little too safe and friendly. And now it's okay. No, he's still kind of a dick.
So actually, I have almost that exact same note in Act 2, so I'm just going to go ahead and say it now. I really do like him in this episode, because I feel like every time we see a Hondo, or at least, every time we see a Hondo, he's comedic relief. But there are some times where we get more layers to Hondo, because he's supposed to be a comedic relief. But, like, we've also seen a noble side of him when he was working with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And then, like, way, way back in season 2, we saw some honor in him and a fatherly side when he was working with Boba Fett, since Hondo was really good friends with Jango. So every once in a while, we see these new layers of him, and in this episode, we're seeing him just be ruthless. They're like, he just doesn't care that he's willing to kill kids. Like, he wants kids because there's money involved, and he's going to kill these kids to get that money. So I do like how when we normally see Hondo, it's comedy. But every once in a while, we get these really good episodes where we get this, like, new side of him that really helps flesh him out as a character. So it's really cool and really nice.
Well, it sort of brings him back to where we first met him, where he was a bad guy, you know.
Yeah, but he was a fun bad guy, and it was
It was
him versus
he's still fun. He's just
Anakin and Obi-Wan, and he tied the three of them together, so that's just fun.
Yeah, it's just reminding you that he will bite you, you know. He's fun to have around, but you gotta be careful to bite you.
He's fun to have around until he realizes you have gold nails on, and then he'll bite your fingers off to get to the gold on your nails.
Exactly.
Because your nails did at the gold parlor. I don't know. So
yeah, he'll pull a Gollum on your ring.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, that's a good reference. Well, that's all I have for Act 1. Act 2.
Act 2. Nice.
All right, Act 2. Back on the ship, the younglings are trying to use the Force to put their lightsabers together and put together their lightsaber pieces. Petro rushes through completing his lightsaber, stating that he'll both challenge Obi-Wan to a duel and also kill General Grievous. And Ahsoka gives him a okay, kid, look. Yuing takes one look at the lightsaber and can tell that Petro made it wrong. If the kid tried to light it, the lightsaber would explode, killing him. Petro has to start over. Suddenly, the ship rattles as a far-off explosion sounds off. Ahsoka runs to the bridge, seeing Hondo's ship shooting at their hyperdrive. She commands R2 to get them out of there, but Hondo harpoons the ship and pulls it close to dock them. Yuling takes the crystals from the younglings to keep safe in his chest compartment, but Petro tricks the droid and hangs onto his kyber crystal. The pirates break onto the ship. Ahsoka rushes back to the younglings, who are frightened when they hear that pirates are there. Yuang suggests the number one strategy for all Jedi. Let's hide in the ventilation shafts. Petra wants to fight, but Ahsoka's like, get your ass down there now! And she plans to fight, but not head-to-head. Ahsoka makes a plan. Saucy Star Eyes and Kid Fisto will get to R2 in the cockpit to secure the ship. The rest will go with Yuang to secure themselves in the hold. Ahsoka plans to put all the power into the engines to break the boarding tube, blowing the pirates into space. Neither Ahsoka nor the younglings sound too sure about this plan. She commands them, do not engage the pirates, and sends all the kids on their way. Hondo knows the kids will be in the ventilation system, and he tells his pirates to get in there and flush them out, even if that means killing the kids. The pirates can't fit in there, so Hondo orders the kids to be smoked out. Sassy Star Eyes and Kid Fisto make it to the cockpit, but a pirate stops them from shutting the door. Time for R2-D2 to save the day again! He defends the children and fights the pirate, allowing them to hold on to the cockpit. The other kids aren't faring so well, as smoke drives them out of the ventilation shafts and they're found by the pirates. When the kids are found, Petra reveals that he still has his kyber crystal. He puts it in his lightsaber that it's still made wrong from earlier. Handing it to the pirate turns it on, and the kids dive into the ventilation shaft. The lightsaber explodes, knocking out the pirates. Yuang gathers the kids to run away. Katuni is appalled that Petra could have killed the pirates, but Petra is tired of running. Yuang advises against fighting since he's damaged and couldn't aid them. But the younglings agreed that it's time to fight.
It's very, I swear to God, they watched all Clone Wars before they made Force Awakens, because it's a very Force Awakens scene where they climb into the, you know, underneath the grating, and they can hear the pirates talking above them and everything.
Oh, it's a Star Wars thing. Like in the prequels, like, Anakin went into the ventilation shafts, I think,
yeah,
at some point
this,
in the original trilogy.
But this
someone
one's
went
just, in... like, on the Falcon. It's not, like, the ventilation... Everybody, I mean, Die Hard, they go into the ventilation... Star Trek, they would go into the ventilation shafts. But this one, they go into... It's, like, it's not really the ventilation shafts, because they're just underneath the walkway, you know, like in Force Awakens. They're looking up at the grates at the pirates walking around above them.
Mm-hmm.
So it just was very much like the Force Awakens to me. Me visually. And yeah, my other note is not sucked into space, but we already know that. And I'm just gonna rename Petro's lightsaber Chekhov's lightsaber, because you knew something was gonna happen as soon as they were like that. The way he explained it is like that lightsaber would explode, leaving nothing but the crystal behind. So he explained that so that you could see, like, at the end that Petro's just like, oh, I'll grab my crystal back after that explodes, you know. So,
yeah.
So it was a little bit foreshadowed there.
You know, I didn't put it in my notes, but I was thinking about Petro and him keeping his lightsaber, and when I was watching the first act, I was like, "Kid, you're gonna get everybody in trouble." But it actually works out well, and I liked that it kind of turned that on its head. Because normally, like, if he's in a lot of media, if he's holding on to this, he'll get caught with it and then, like, lose it or something like that. But he actually kept it, and it worked. And I, like, normally, like, I wouldn't reward him not listening, but in that instance, it saved them. So I liked it that they kind of turned that trope a little bit on its head.
Yes, yeah. Or at least he kept it, and it was, and he might have kept it, he kept it, and it's just like, oh, geez, what a jerk. But he actually kept it, maybe thinking that he might be able to do that, you know?
Yeah, and it worked, and I liked it.
Yes.
All right, guys, I'm going to give you a little insight about how I do my notes. So I'll watch a little bit, I will write the... like, write a little bit at a time, watch a little bit more, read a little bit at a time, and then, like, when it's something pops up in my notes, that I'm like, oh, this is noteworthy, I'll pause and I'll write the notes. So this has two parts to it. So when they went into the ventilation shafts, my note was, so often throughout the prequels, Clone Wars, Rebels, and the original trilogy, the Jedi hide and move through ventilation shafts. At some point, I would love to see an enemy in a show or a movie be like, this is a known Jedi tactic. Burn the ventilation shafts. And I mean, because Anakin did it all the time, so why doesn't Vader often go, just send some stormtroopers into the ventilation shafts? Then I continued watching the episode, and my next note was, thank you, Hondo, for pointing out that Jedi hide in ventilation shafts. And I was like, Hondo answered my note for me. Yay, Hondo. And I like how, matter of fact, he was like, oh, of course they're in the ventilation shafts. That's like the number one tactic of like what these people do. And I was just dying laughing because like Hondo got it right.
Yes, right. Well, of course he did.
He's Hondo. And, like, he states it like it's such, like, a matter-of-fact thing. He's like, of course the Jedi are in the ventilation shafts. They always go in there. And I'm sitting here going, why can't anybody else be as good as Hondo? Because they literally do this all the time in Star Wars. So, yeah.
No, Hondo and Cad Bane have their shit together enough that they're not really... They're wary of the Jedi, but they're not very impressed by them. You know, they're not as intimidated as most people are. Seem to be.
Yeah. And because I said my other note back in Act 1, the only other note I have is, remember in Season 4 when Ahsoka was like, unhand me, brigand! Huang got the exact same line, and it's so much better. He goes, unhand me, brigand! And I was like, yes, Ahsoka, that's how you say that line. It was the exact same line. I just laughed because I had to pause because I just yelled out in the middle of my house, unhand me, brigand! And then my cat judged me. It was sad.
Get used to that.
Oh, God, yeah. I took a picture of her earlier, put it on my Facebook. She got wet while she was running around outside, and she looked like an angry gargoyle sitting in the window. It was cute. Because it's been raining like a mofo here for, like, ever. So, yeah. All right, that's all. That's all I have for Act 2. All
right, you want to finish this puppy up?
Yeah, let's finish this puppy up. Act 3. Ahsoka puts all the power into the engines and ready to blow some pirates out into space. But the younglings haven't called in safe to Sassy Star Eyes or Kid Fisto. Ahsoka realizes that means that the kids have engaged the pirates. Meanwhile, the other four younglings take, I don't know what they're called, the Jedi training laser shooting ball orb things? What are those called?
Maybe it was called a seeker in episode 4.
Yeah, the thing that Luke is fighting and it shoots him in the butt or something.
Yeah.
So, actually, cool note, the design of those was used from episode 4. So, but they take those shooting training laser ball floating orb things and set them to the highest power. They hide and trap a few of the pirates in the training room with the orbs. It's like Jedi Home Alone with their trap working, shooting at the pirates. Running on the hallway, they open the wrong next door, because there's Hondo. Huang steps in front of the kids to protect them as they're trapped with the pirates moving in. Ahsoka runs in, saying that the Jedi Council will not tolerate this attack. And Ahsoka's like, you were way nicer back on Onderon when you brought us missiles to steal Guerrera and my friends. And Hondo's like, yeah, I'm about to make a shit ton of money on those kyber crystals, so I'm willing to kill all of you for it. And Ahsoka and Hondo fight as Huang leads the kids away. A pirate shoots Huang's head clear off his body and then shoots off his arms. And Huang still kicks the shit out of the pirate with just his legs. The kids grab his limbs and run. Ahsoka really doesn't want to hurt Hondo, but with the kids safely in the hold, she orders Kid Fisto to fly and break the loading tube. The pirates and Ahsoka fly through the hallways in the vacuum, and she kicks Hondo into his own loading tube. Docking bay, that's actually what it's called instead of loading tube, Hope. Good job. She commands the younglings to make the jump to hyperspace, but a pirate flies out of nowhere and hits Ahsoka down the docking bay with Hondo and the rest of his men. The kids jump into hyperspace and away from danger, and the kids are all excited from the action, and they rant about how cool Ahsoka was fighting all the pirates. We know, kids. We know Ahsoka is super cool. But they realize quickly that Ahsoka is not on the ship. Back on Hondo's ship, since Hondo lost all his kyber crystals, he will use Ahsoka to make money. Next week, the end.
Yeah, you know, when they knock out Ahsoka, Hondo's pretty creepy when he's, like, playing with her lip and stuff. It was nicely animated.
They actually updated Hondo's animation for this episode.
Yeah, it looked like her lip looked very fleshy and, like, realistic, but, man, that's creepy. Creepy. And I noticed...
I was going to say, was that your only note for the end?
No. Yet? Okay. I noticed Huang by this, I don't know what it was that he did or what angle I saw him, but I just noticed he's very Ralph McQuarrie, another very Ralph McQuarrie looking thing in Clone Wars. And I'm wondering if he might be like a little bit of some of the earlier renditions of C-3PO might have made their way into him.
Hmm. And there was I don't see anything about that, but I could see that.
There was another sort of callback, I don't know if intentional or not, but that I thought to Empire Strikes Back with a Wookiee carrying around a droid in pieces.
Yeah.
His droid buddy in pieces. So I thought that was pretty cool. The Wookiee would be the one who's like, let me grab the droid, you know, every time. But that's all the real notes I had. The animation for them, it's like I think they put all the animation of the pirates coming blasting their way into the ship, like the way the explosions look, were really neat and colorful, and also reminiscent of Star Wars Episode 4. And the scene where they were flying through the ship, you know, because of the vacuum created, was really nicely done. You know,
because like you would turn down the hallway with them. It's another one of those long tracking shots that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Because you would see, like, you would, like, follow them. So, like, you would turn the corner with Ahsoka, and she would jump forward and kick Hondo, and he would grab something. And then the camera would turn, and, like, where Hondo's holding on to something, and Ahsoka would grab him and throw him. Like, it was a really, yeah. That's one of my notes. It's such a cool scene.
Yeah, I don't know if the physics are completely 100% right, of like they would be if that was happening, but yeah, exactly. Who cares? It looks right, you know?
So it looks cool.
It looks really cool. So it's neat. It's just a new sort of element. It's like when, what was it, in Season 2, maybe? When, I think it was when they were fighting Cad Bane, and they switched off the gravity in the ship, and all of a sudden. And everybody had to fight in zero gravity. It was like that. It was something new. It was neat. But that's about all I got.
For me, my first big note is, why can't C-3PO be as cool as He-Yang?
I know you don't like that AI, but you like He-Yang's AI.
I know, and I think it's just because it's so different. Like he's
maybe
kind of like
Doctor Who.
No, I think it's a lot of it's just the character. I mean, he kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, if K2SO was, like, a lightsaber teacher, because he has that kind of sass that K2 has, and that's something I really like about K2.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, my very first note is, if you listen to the show, you know I'm not a big droid person, but I really like Huang. I think it's a lot of it is, I think, the performance that Tennant puts into it, because he puts a lot of care in his voice, and a lot of quirk, and a lot of sass, and like, unlike a lot of droids, where they sometimes talk, like, at one note, and there's not a lot of inflection in their voice, he adds a lot of that. But I also like just little things, like, he genuinely cares and is concerned for these children. Like, when they come out the wrong door and there's Hondo, the first thing Huang does is get in front of the kids and hold out his arms in front of the kids to protect them.
I figured that.
And he's like, I can't help you fight. And even when his arms are blown off, he still fights with no head and no arms and kicks the shit out of a pirate.
It's got to be, like, part of his primary programming, you know?
Yeah, like, and it's interesting, because, like, when they first introduce him, like, he's walking with his hands behind his back, and he's kind of hunched over like an old man. And he's 1,000 years old, so he kind of seems like he's introduced, like, an old thing. But then throughout the course of the episode, I guess he feels younger. Like, when he was saying, like...
Well, he's a robot. He's a robot. They could, you know, they could just... I mean, who knows how many times he's gotten new joints and, you know, upgrades and stuff, so...
Yeah.
And, I mean, earlier on in the episode, he's sort of saying, like, I've been injured and I'm not operating at full capacity. But when he gets his head blasted off, all of a sudden he's doing ninja kicks and stuff like that, so...
Yeah. But I guess it's like the presentation, because he's presented like this old man, but he's really, like, secretly a ninja. And he even says, like, I've been on this ship 1,000 years, and it's never been taken. You know, so it just, like, shows that, like, his one thing is to protect these kids. And he's just a really cool character. I really, really enjoy him a lot.
Seems to have robot pride.
Yeah, a little. Don't say that. That's scary. I just wanted to throw out a reminder. Why did I write this note? Oh, it was because Ahsoka was saying Hondo won't be on the good graces of the council. The reason I just noted that this episode takes place chronologically before Revival, which was the first episode of the season, where the council is like, Obi-Wan, you need to go help Hondo because he's in our good graces. And this episode takes place actually chronologically before that one. So Hondo's not yet in the good graces of the council.
Right,
yet.
Right.
technically. So, yeah. But it actually still works, too, because since that episode came first, it's like, oh, why would Hondo backslide? Well, he's a pirate. I also wanted to give, I'm going to do the second one first. I also just wish that, like, the kids went, like, full Home Alone. I know they didn't have a lot of time to do it, but, like, I would have loved to see, like, several rooms of traps. Like, the pirates keep coming into a new room, and there's, like, a new trap instead of just the one.
Yeah, it would have been stretching it a little bit.
I wouldn't mind it. Like, maybe, like, just a series of, like, three rooms in a row. Bam, bam, bam. So,
it
like, you
been,
know.
It might have been too comedic, you know what? You know, because.
But this one I wouldn't mind because it's a kid episode. It's a episode right. with children. And so, like, it'd be one thing if, say, like, it was Anakin doing it. But it's a group of kids. And, like, I wouldn't mind it if it was a bit of a kid-like episode in that aspect.
Maybe if it had ended up being its own show, it would have been more like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And appealing to a younger audience, they would have done it more.
Mm-hmm. Though I have to give Ahsoka a ton of credit for handling this episode. Because if it was Anakin there, he would have been killing pirates left and right, problem.
Yeah, there but just would have been pirate pieces all over the ship.
But, like, Ahsoka repeatedly gives, like, pirates chance after chance to leave. And she force pushes, like, this was the only weird, like, part of, I wasn't sure about the physics. I think Hondo's loading dock tube had its own gravity or air or something. Because once they were in there, like, far enough down, they weren't being sucked back up towards the vacuum.
Right, right.
So she was, like, shoving them down the tube to make sure they got out with their lives, except for the one guy who got stuck in the edge and went out the ship. And she even tells Hondo that she does not want to kill him. So I liked that because, for one, it shows a lot of, like, how Obi-Wan's growing, or how Ahsoka's growing. But it also, I think, shows a lot of Obi-Wan's teachings for her. You know, like, he probably has taught her a lot of, like, you know, handling situations like this. Like, where Anakin would have just, like, killed everyone, Obi-Wan was probably the one that was like, you need to give people chances, you need to walk them through that, you need to, because that's what Jedi do. So I really liked how Ahsoka handled this, because it probably also would have traumatized those kids if she just started beheading pirates in front of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because even then, Katooni was like, you almost killed those pirates, Petro. And he was like, eh, whatever.
Yep, yep. Yeah. You don't even know. You don't even know.
Just wait till you're on the front line of the Clone Wars, kids. Just wait. So I was talking about Telas last week, and last week you thought it was a one and done. And really, it was the first one of this arc. But looking back on it, last week really does work as a one and done.
Oh, because, yeah, totally.
And because this episode kind of sets up the rest of the story arc where it's going. Well, last week was just, like,
it
introducing.
It does not work as a one and done.
Yeah. And so I know you're a fan of the one and dones, but would you be okay? Like, would you like more arcs like this where the first episode sort of serves as a one and done and then the previously following three episodes go together?
Sure. Yeah, I like that style of doing it. It means also when you put the show into repeats that you don't have to catch all of them in a row. You know, you could, pardon, just catch the first, you know, the first episode and be entertained, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is this one three or four?
Four.
It's four?
Four counting last week.
Yeah, so you'll probably have to catch the last three all in a row, because I imagine, you know, the fourth one will be a resolution type of deal. But that's, I like one and dones. I don't want them all to be one and done, though, because I like the arcs, too. The arcs really allow them to advance stories and characters, so. But I like the one and dones sprinkled in there. And if it ends up serving a double purpose as, you know, an intro episode and a one and done, that's fine with me.
Yeah, well, that's really all I have.
So, you want me to score mine up?
No. The end. Bye, guys.
Bye.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, things scored up.
No, I gave it. I gave it the same. Pardon me. I got. I have some lemonade that went down the wrong tube earlier when you were talking, and it won't quit. I gave it the same score as I gave last week, an 8 out of 10. I really like. I was kind of snarky, you know, during the show about it, but I like this episode. I don't know. About the same as the last one. I wouldn't say a little more, but it was good to look at. I like that it's actually with the kids. It's still. I don't want to say an adult storyline, but it's still staying in the sort of PG-13. There's a real sense of danger with the pirates, you know, and I don't really think that, like, I wasn't really thinking that the pirates might kill the kids, but you never know in Clone Wars.
The only time I felt like they were, like, in the most danger was the one that came into the cockpit with, like, the scythe, And if R2 yes. wasn't there, those kids were done for.
Those kids were dog meat, yeah. So, but I liked that it was sort of like a combination of the kids did get to save the day, but at the same time, they did get to be inexperienced kids. And it sort of, the balance of those two things made it a little more realistic, you know, of how that situation would play out. And so, yeah, 8 out of 10, just slightly above average episode.
For me, last week I gave it a 7, which is like my baseline average episode. And for this week, I like the episode a little bit more than last week. We get more action and drama with Hondo and the pirates attacking the younglings. And I like seeing the kids setting their one trap and then fighting back. But what really made this episode for me is the character of Hugh Yang, and throughout the entire episode. He's just so solid, and we even get to see him fight. And I just really like his design, and I like his actions, I like his voice acting. He's great. And also, Ahsoka's final fight in the last scene is just so awesome, with like her and Hondo flying through the hallways. So well done. So I gave it a 7.5 out of 10, which is just like now above my average of episodes.
So we both went just above average this time.
Mm-hmm. Well, if as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, The Last Jedi Character Study.
And this one comes from Paul C. Kelly.
Woo!
And he says, I like you pointed out the similarity of DJ Codebreaker to Hondo. Yeah, he is more Hondo than Cad Bane, I would say. Yeah, I would totally agree with that, yes. With a little bit of maybe Han Solo pre-Star Wars thrown in, maybe. Last Jedi review where I heard Canto Bright theme in. Oh, okay. I like it. It's not as good as the original, like, cantina music, but it's still pretty good. And I think it's John Williams too. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites in the score. It has that goofy cantina theme feel. Yeah, it sure does. I like it a lot better than the cantina movie music they came up with for Force Awakens. Hopefully in episode 9 we do not see Poe and Rey disarming a shield generator with Ewoks and Finn leaving an assault on the Death Killer 2. Ha 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 ha. Yeah, I hope not. And I would say, yeah, I don't think you have to worry about it, but yeah, we got J.J. Abrams directing it, so yeah, I hope not. Although I think both their ranks and characters will be much stronger in the next movie. I sure hope so.
Me too. All right. Kex, I was so sad because I thought it said Rex. When I first pulled it, I was like, Rex!
And we're to our candy part, and we're eating Kex this week, but not Kex like the internet troll K-E-K-S, which is shorthand for snorty laughs. This is K-E-X. Where did you say this is from? Denmark?
Denmark. So Chris hates American Kit Kats, so our friend Daria Gonzalez sends us candy from all over the world to review, because Daria is a flight attendant. He's also Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It. And this week we are doing Kex from Denmark. It looks like a chocolate covered wafer. Kind of looks like a Nutty Buddy a little bit, but very big.
Yes, it does. It looks like a thin Nutty Buddy. It's got that same sort of texture on top.
It doesn't have the buddy, the butter,
the peanut butter
side, but it's really good. Oh, wow.
What's the center of it, do you think? Is it chocolate? I'm trying to just dig out just the center part because there's chocolate on the outside. I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a chocolate Kit Kat.
I'm getting my pre-chocolate to, like, brace myself for Kanan possibly dying.
Well, it's a huge bar, but it's so thin. But it's like 8 Kit Kat bars, you know, as I'm looking at it. If you put, like, 8 Kit Kat bars all together.
Like the king-size Kit Kat bars?
Yeah, it's just a little thinner.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, my God. That's really good. Mm.
Very milky with the chocolate.
It's very light, too, for being so big. Like, I was just kind of scared that it was huge, but then I was like, this is so light, I could easily eat all this.
Mm-hmm.
And eat all the chocolate before Kanan dies.
You should.
As always, thank you, Dario. We love you.
Good work, Dario, and good work the people at Cloetta who made Kex, the good people of Denmark. There's a...
I thought you said... What's the word for chicken vagina?
cloaca.
That's what I got you, son.
Yeah, no, this tastes better than cloaca. As far as I know, I've heard.
You about to say you've eaten chicken vaginas before?
Yeah, but they were deep fried, so.
Deep fried chicken veg.
You can get them at Chinese restaurants. They keep them in a barrel in the front.
Are they really?
In a barrel full of brine, you got little tongs that you got to pull them out.
Really?
No. Oh. I just wanted to see your picture, just have you picturing somebody pulling chicken vaginas out of a barrel full of brine, like a pickle.
Well, I've been listening to like a new podcast called Whiting Wongs, and it's by Dan Harmon, who is the creator of Community and Rick and Morty, and Jessica Gao, who is the writer of the Pickle Rick episode. And what it is they're talking about racism in Hollywood and, like, racism and, like, writing. They're pretty much, like, addressing racism. But it's Dan Harmon, and so he's just, like, he's playing the devil's advocate side of it because he's, like, a mid-40s white guy.
Uh-huh.
And she's Chinese. She's a Chinese-American. So she's coming at it from an Asian point of view. Well, they just finished their Thanksgiving episode. The one I finished listening to was their Thanksgiving episode. So they were talking about the differences of Thanksgiving between, like, Asian Thanksgiving and, like, American Thanksgiving. And she was talking about some of the things they eat. So I was just like, so when you started talking about that, I was like, really? I might have to, like, I wonder if Jessica, like, has eaten that. And then I was like, wait, this is racist. Just assuming that that's true. Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at Two True Freaks. I'm just curious why that. I mean, do they just have the equivalent of a Thanksgiving day, like the day that they have a big feast and give thanks that just happened to crop up in their?
She was talking about like family is so important in Chinese culture that like any excuse to get together with family to have a big meal, they'll take it. And so like she was talking about how.
So is she talking about, like, Chinese people in America?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, and she was talking about, like, when they get together, because one of the questions that Dan had for her was, like, what do they eat? She was like, well, we eat just, like, really good Chinese food. Just, you know, we make, like, 15 dishes, and we set it on the table, just like Thanksgiving, but it's all Chinese food. And she was talking about her boyfriend, who is this, like, 6'4 white guy, and she was talking about how she knows in China, in Chinese, in Korean culture, this is true, but she's not sure about other Asian cultures, that height is seen as something to try and look for in a partner, someone who's really tall, and her boyfriend is 6'4". And then that's first very important because you can't buy height, and then wealth is the second important thing because you can always make more money, but you can't buy height. And so in Chinese and Korean culture, they like obsessed over people who are tall. And so like her boyfriend was saying that her boyfriend loves going there because there's a language barrier because her family speaks mostly Chinese. So he's just happy to like sit there and eat quietly for an hour, just really good Chinese food while they obsess over his height.
Well, everybody goes like, look how tall he is. Good.
And that's the thing, like, he doesn't understand what they're saying, so he's just happily eating, because she was saying that, like, he's a little bit of, he's shy and he's a bit recluse, so he's, like, okay, he's absolutely okay not talking to people for an hour while just eating good Chinese food.
Yeah, but but he can probably tell they're, you know, I mean, you can tell when somebody's talking down on you or talking good, because he probably hears, ooh, what's going on, and he's probably just like, yes.
That's but right, yeah, she ladies. Was saying that like she's done like her parents are very impressed with her boyfriend because he's so tall. But it's a really fun podcast. It's called Whiting Wongs, and it's they're talking about like the first episode was them just kind of like trying to figure. Well, was the first episode is them addressing why they were doing the podcast because they were talking about writing and diversity in Hollywood. Because Jessica Gao, when she wrote the Pickle Rick episode, she purposely wrote an Asian character. And when they casted Susan Sarandon to the voice, she was upset because she purposely wrote that so an Asian voice actress could have the role.
Get some work.
So
yeah,
so she brought it to Dan Harmon, and they were talking about it, and like Dan had never really thought about it that way before. Like he didn't realize that that was the point of doing it. He just saw, hey, our next episode, Susan Sarandon wants to be in the episode, and she's only in an episode, and she's only free for 3 days, and she's an Academy Award winner, let's bring her in. So he saw it from that point of view. So, like, that's why they started doing the podcast, so they could talk about, like, racism and writing in Hollywood and stuff like that. And then the second episode happened, and they recorded it the day after Charlottesville. And so they were talking about, like, how to deal with, like, internet trolls and stuff. And then the third episode was them talking about Confederate, the show that the two guys from Game of Thrones were wanting to do. And ever since then, like, they, after the first three episodes, which they did all three at once, they started getting actual different topics for the episode. So, like, the one I listened to just now was the Thanksgiving episode. They did the one I listened to before that was them talking about, they made this great analogy talking about, like, privilege, because they're, like, it's come up a lot, like, what exactly, like, what white privilege is. And they came up with this, like, metaphor of there's a wall, and you have a white person and an Asian person climbing up the wall at the same time. And it's a 20-minute long metaphor. I'm very quickly summarizing it. And about 25% up, Asian detecting spears come out to attack the Chinese person. So the white person then has to make a choice, like, do they, like, help the person or do they keep climbing? And if they do climb to the top, where the top of the wall is Hollywood, do they then have to make a choice, like, do they go, like, hey, let me throw you a rope ladder, or do they go, I worked hard to get up here. Of course I worked and earned my way up here. And they were saying, like, it's not that, like, white people don't work hard and don't struggle and stuff like that. They just don't have Asian detecting spears coming after them about halfway up the wall. And so it's a lot of fun because they're just talking about all sorts of different things, and I've been really enjoying this podcast. So
what's the name of it again?
Whiting Wongs.
Whiting Wongs.
Like, and it's spelled just how it sounds, like whiting, like the color white, Wongs, W-O-N-G-S.
And I'm sure you can find that on the internets.
But yeah,
not
but
till after you search for twotruefreaks.com.
Yeah, but it's a lot of fun because Dan Harmon really does play the devil's advocate. So he's coming up from the point of view of, like, a 44-year-old white guy. But it's all, like, very respectful. And, like, so, like, when he asks questions, a lot of it is just simply he does not know and does not understand. But sometimes he is playing devil's advocate, and it's a lot of fun. It's a really fun podcast.
Excellent.
Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, my hidden fortress full of podcasts. You have to break through a waterfall of ice, go in, get good with your ego, man, and then you can find out which podcast is the perfect podcast for you. It'll find you, because there's so many podcasts there to choose from. And you can see all those podcasts popping up there. You can see them. Even more fun is going to the Two True Freaks Facebook page, where you can see us post up all our podcasts there, and the Two True Freaks Cantina, and we even have a Twitter, Two True Freaks, that's, since I hate Twitter, it's run by Gene, the podcasting machine.
Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum-bum,
Gene. Ooh, we're still getting fancy.
Zoom!
You're sort of doing the Fergie Star Spangled Banner version of da 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 da.
I heard about that. I haven't seen it yet.
Honestly, okay. It's not as horrible as it's not good. I'll just say that right out the bat. It was not as horrible as I was sort of, like, hoping and expecting it to be. So I was a little disappointed.
From what I gathered, it was different. That's what I gathered.
Well, the different. I think she was trying to do it like Marilyn Monroe. Did Happy Birthday, Mr. President to John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
And that was really awkward and sexy, you know? Except she was singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President to the whole United States. Like, I don't know. It was weird. So it was a weird choice, but that's how they chose to arrange it. But yeah, she was, you know, to her credit, maybe she couldn't hear her voice. She had a bad monitor speaker and couldn't hear her voice and was just winging it. But not the train wreck that I was sort of hoping for. Anyway, it wasn't as train wrecky as when she, like, peed her pants on stage. That was more to get wound up about. Anyway, where can people find you, Hope?
You can find me at Jagas and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account, and I'm about to go cry over Star Wars Rebels on Twitter.
You're gonna find out.
Yeah, and you can also find me at Hope Molnax on Twitter. And I'm also the news writer for WhatTheFangirl.com. And I was really bad this past week because I've been sick most of the week, so I didn't get a chance to write any articles just because I was trying not to die all week because I was sick. And I'm on the tail end of it.
Keep trying not to die. Yeah, keep on that.
Yeah, I was trying not to die because I was just sick all week. So I haven't written anything this week, but I am the news writer for WhatTheFangirl.com, and I'm going to be talking about my editors soon because we're going to be debating, like, what direction to take it next and what's next for What the Fangirl. So as soon as I know, I might let you guys know about that, depending on what we decide on when we get a chance to talk about it.
But tell yeah, tell them to go towards Fortune and Glory, kid.
Fortune and Glory! With my business cards that you don't have! Hey, what's this, Chris? What's the sound?
Oh, it sounds like a pig. Oh, it's a bunch of business cards. A
big that you don't have. I'm professional. Actually, I do need to order more before I go to 221bcon 2 months now, so. Oh yeah, I'm gonna be at 221bcon, guys, and I applied for panels, so as soon as I know, I'll let you guys know what panels I'm on, just in case you go to 221bcon and say hi.
Go up and get a card from Hope.
Yeah. I applied for, what did I apply for? I applied for the How to Podcast panel, because I've done that every year. I applied for the Steven Universe panel, just because I want an excuse to talk about gay space rocks that I love. What was the other panel I applied for? It was something. I don't remember. I applied for it. I don't know. I'll find out
creating
if I did.
Creating a classy podcast. With class.
As soon as I find out whether or not I got into the panel, then I will know. Yay!
Everyone knows I'm a fancy lad, and Hope is a classy lass.
Didn't they email me? Maybe they didn't. Okay, I thought I got superhero names.
Fancy lad and classy lass.
Classy lad. I like that because it kind of sounds like classy ass.
Classy ass.
And then I'd be like, no, it's lass, you brigand. Unhand me, brigand.
Unhand me, by the way.
Yeah, Yoda.
Yoda slunk right away after this platitude.
He's gone.
Yeah, I think Yoda went and cleared his browser history. All right, we'll see you next week.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."